Most people don't trust marketing messages, which is what makes case studies from customers so valuable. In this episode, B2B technology copywriter Rob Beadle shares how case studies can be used throughout the whole buying journey and how businesses can systemize getting new case studies created rather than leaving it up to chance. You're listening to Marketing Free, the podcast that brings you insights from freelance marketeers and encourages more businesses to work with independent marketing experts rather than defaulting to expensive agencies. I'm your host, David Richter, and each week I'll be speaking with a different freelance marketing specialist, giving you tips and inspiration to improve your marketing. This week on Marketing Freed, I'm joined by B2B tech copywriter Rob Beadle. Rob, great to see you again. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, David. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, not at all. So, just for everyone's benefit, if you could give everyone a bit of an introduction to who you are, your career, and actually how you've ended up working as a freelancer.
Sure. So, I've been a freelance copywriter for about 7 years now, and I tend to work with technology companies, software providers, IT firms, and doing all sorts of digital marketing for them. But prior to that, I used to work in the corporate world. For about 20 years, I was a technology consultant and project manager working with some blue chip companies. And that was enjoyable, rewarding. But after about 20 years, I decided I needed a bit of a change. And alongside my day job, I had a sort of an evening job, except it wasn't a job. I was volunteering for some local campaign groups. And I was writing their campaign literature, the copy for their emails and websites. And so when it came to looking for a change in my career, I thought, actually, I can bring these two elements together, both the technology experience and some of the project management, along with copywriting and that marketing campaigning experience. So that was what I brought together. And I thought, actually, I'd like to do this for myself. So set up my own business and have been a freelancer ever since.
Brilliant. Thank you. Well, look, when we caught up before, one of the questions I ask every interviewee, is there a particular area that you really want to talk about that you could talk about for ages and that you really believe is something that every marketer, every business should be doing more of? And straight away, your answer was absolutely, it's case studies. So I'm sure everyone on the episode knows what a case study is, but I've got the feeling, I think shared with you, that they're probably underutilized or not optimized as well as they could be to get the best results for the businesses. So could you just start at the beginning and just describe the benefits of using case studies in your marketing and perhaps also where they fit within the customer journey?
Brilliant. Yeah, sure. Well, the key benefits with using case studies are that they're an incredibly versatile form of content, incredibly versatile form of marketing. So they help you to attract leads, and they also help you to close sales. So all the way through the sales funnel, you can use case studies to actually attract more people from your audience in terms of prospects and leads, but also help guide them through that journey. Because the great advantage of using case studies, unlike a lot of other forms of content, is that you've got the potential for it being someone else's voice, someone else coming in and commenting an independent view on what you do, what you've delivered, and the products and services that you offer. So they're the sort of the cynical person who reads marketing and thinks, well, you know, this company, yeah, you know, they would say that in their marketing, wouldn't they? You know, they're going to big themselves up and say about how great they are. Whereas with a case study, you've got the opportunity for actually using your customer's voice and having them comment on their experience of working with you, what it was that working with you actually did for them and for their business. So it gives a very different perspective on your business and your marketing. And the other reason why I think case studies are such a powerful tool to use is their flexibility in terms of being able to use them in different forms, not only across different stages of the funnel, but using them for digital marketing, but also using them as printed assets as well as printed material for direct mail or in-person events that you perhaps might do, and use them as a way to actually build trust and to build credibility with your business by showing you, actually, here's some real world examples of where we've done what we said we would do and what the feedback is that we got from our customers and from our clients about the impact that had on their business.
Yeah, I love the point about repurposing them. Thinking back to my career, there's one example that stands out. We'd launched tweaked a software product to appeal to a particular industry sector. And as part of our marketing, we created some case studies, and they're working fine as further down the sales funnel, because it was some collateral that our sales team could use to add credibility and build some trust with our prospective customers. But we took the decision to actually run it one of the case studies as an advertorial in one of the industry magazines. And it, I mean, it cost a bit of money. Not, it wasn't going to break the bank or anything, but it was a not insignificant investment. We ran the advertorial and it happened. But as part of that deal, we also negotiated that we could use that advertorial as a printout as well, or get copies of the magazine that it appeared in, sorry. So as well as the advertorial, we then stuck a post-it note onto every page that the case study appeared in and direct mailed copies of that out to every single person that we wanted to reach to. And we absolutely generated loads of inquiries off the back of it, and we could definitely point to, we definitely won this particular customer that was worth a decent amount of revenue to the business purely because of that particular activity. So I really love the idea of repurposing the case studies. Have you got any other ideas as to how case studies might be used beyond, say, direct mail?
The other forms for case studies is if you're perhaps exhibiting an event and you've got an exhibition stand, and you might have some lovely graphics or videos there to attract people's attention. But often for those types of events, people tend to gravitate towards sort of very branded giveaways, whether it be sweets or bags or things like that, which, you know, are great and eye-catching, but actually don't really have a lot of substance behind them. They don't really say what you do as a business or how you actually deliver your services or your products. So actually having some printed collateral that you can use that's based on case studies with your customers, it's a great handout, it's a great conversation starter to have. And someone that visits your stall could actually take that away and use that for conversations back within their own organization. So across the real world, in-person events, and then from a digital point of view online, as well as actually publishing your case studies on your website, other ways that you can repurpose them are to perhaps turn them into social media posts, taking out some key sound bites from the case study. And another way of taking some of the essence of the case study is to sprinkle it through some of your blog posts. So when you're talking about a particular topic or a particular issue that your audience might be facing, you can illustrate it by providing some real world examples of businesses and clients you've worked with that have actually had similar issues and how they've overcome them, by taking out elements of the case study, including, you know, some of the quotes from the customers themselves, so that it actually brings it to life and actually makes it more engaging. And I think that's the real gold dust that's there within case studies, if you can actually find out the real story that's going on for your customer and the journey that they've been on. You'll find that a lot of their competitors, their peers, and people in similar industries who are part of your audience will be facing similar challenges too. And so being able to illustrate that through other types of content, other forms of marketing, gives you the opportunity for other people to go, actually, hang on a minute, that's the position that we're in. You know, we've got that same challenge there. And being able to empathize with someone that's in a similar position to them means that actually that story and the power of that marketing then is compounded beyond publishing one single case study itself.
Yeah, I love that, because it lends itself to generating demand from probably the majority of any market where they're not actively in a buying frame of mind. And obviously case studies have a utility for that stage of the buying cycle. But the majority of any market is probably not thinking about what suppliers should I change to, or which ones should I start using that I haven't used before, but often we'll be searching for particular pain points or solutions, even better, to pains that they're experiencing. And if you can make it easy for them to find you as that possible solution to a pain point that they maybe didn't even realize that a solution exists to that particular pain, and simultaneously you're adding credibility by displaying a case study, I think that's so valuable. Is there a particular process that you would go through in order to create a case study?
Yeah, when I work with clients, the several steps I go through. The first step is really to have a conversation with them to understand what's the goal, what's the objective of it. So is it for an early stage, you know, building awareness around what you do, what you offer, and how you can help customers? Or is it actually something that is going to be used more as a sales collateral with a sales team to go out and actually use face-to-face with prospects to be able to convert them? And again, within that, are there particular elements of your services that you're looking to promote, or you're looking to highlight, or the way that you deliver things? So that's the first step, to understand the goals. Second step is to find out from a client I'm working with as to why they've chosen this particular customer. Is there something about them? Is it because they've perhaps been a long-standing customer, they're a repeat customer, or perhaps they're an early adopter? Perhaps they've taken on a product or a service that's newly been launched, and you want to use them as a bit of a flagship for displaying, look at what you could do, look at the results that you can get to try and grow your customer base in that area. So once I've got that understanding, the third step is really the heart of it, which is to actually have a conversation with the customer themselves. Actually have a video call, a bit like this, with the actual customer that's going to be the subject of the case study, and to find out about their experience, ask them questions about not only, you know, what the pain point they were having, as you mentioned earlier on, that perhaps they were searching for a solution to that pain point, but also was there a particular trigger? You know, then perhaps they've had this pain point for 5 years, 10 years, but maybe there was a particular trigger internally or externally that's actually just pushed them over the edge to think, right, actually now is the time, we've got to make a decision. Again, the reason for that is that people reading the case study or watching the case study, if it becomes a video, can relate to that and to see, actually, you know, that person, that business were in the same position as us. So that interview with a customer is really the heart of the case study, and finding out really what the story is, what the customer's story is behind the case study itself, what the journey is that they've been on. And from talking to them and finding out the challenges they had and the way that they actually worked with the customer themselves, that then enables me to start to understand how to actually present that and how to put it forward in a way that's actually engaging and people can relate to, but also ties back to the client's original objectives. What is it they're wanting to highlight about their business through their customer's story, through the journey that their customer's been on, and through the results that customer's seen and the impact it's had on their business. So that then enables me to draft up the case study, to write it in that sort of story format, and then my client and the customer themselves get a chance to actually review it, if I have any comments before it gets published. And some clients as well then sort of take that written case study and actually then go back and create some videos from it as well. So they're actually doing sort of repurposing on the back of that case study, that the case study has kind of highlighted the story hook to them, and so they can then go in and actually concentrate on that hook and interview the customer for a video case study as well.
That's interesting. So when someone creates a written case study, it's worked in terms of repurposing that into video content as well. What style of video are you producing? Presumably it's not an interview style, it's utilizing the text and sort of animating that in something that's a bit more eye-catching for the media that it's being used in. Is that right?
It can be both. Some people have done that, some people have repurposed it in that way, and other people have used it as a bit of a springboard for creating a sort of a new piece of content. I think the value of doing the written case study first is it's kind of gives you that foundation. It gives you think about a, you know, like a film script, it gives you the whole story, and from that you can perhaps build some trailers. And that's often the way I think of, you know, sort of video content. If you've got a video case study, it perhaps doesn't go into the same detail that you have within the written case study, but it's a way of drawing people in and then reading the full case study itself.
Yeah, that makes loads of sense. Thank you. Before we actually started recording this episode, you mentioned you'd created a nice resource for people to download from you, the case study Kickstarter that covers a lot of that initial process. Do you want to just talk about what's included in that?
Yeah, sure. So one of the things I've found talking to marketers, talking to business owners, is that often that one of the things that they may struggle with, particularly if they're new to case studies or they've not created many in the past, is how to actually get their customers to take part, to actually agree and say, yep, I'm happy to have my name, happy to have the company name in there, and to be interviewed for a case study. And it can seem a little bit daunting. You know, how do you ask? Is it a little bit awkward? Is it a little bit embarrassing to do that? How will they feel with you asking that? So that's why I put together this guide. It's a free guide, and essentially it gives some tips and some advice on, firstly, who to ask, what type of customers, whether it be repeat customers, new customers, early adopters, and then talks about some triggers, some ideas about when's a good time to actually ask your customers. And then probably most importantly, talks about how to ask, what are some of the things you can say. It's a draft email template to use as well in terms of being able to send that off to the customers, and ultimately to give business owners and to give marketeers that head start, so that once you've got a yes, once you've got the customer saying, yep, I'm happy to take part, then, you know, you're ready to go. You're ready to actually start creating the case studies. And I think doing it for the first time is always a little bit daunting, but once you've done a couple, it becomes much easier. And once you've done some as well, Obviously, you can then use that as an example and say, you know, here's one we've done with one of our other clients. This is what will happen. And you'll see the benefits. You'll see how that can actually help your business as well.
Yeah, that's great. There's a couple of points that I'm just going to try and pull at that thread a little bit further, actually. So you touched on who you should be trying to get involved in the case studies. Be interesting to dig into that, please. So when we're talking about who, we could talk about what sort of brands should you be approaching and whether you feel that case studies work best if it's, say, an aspirational brand. So it might be that a business is selling to primarily, let's say, loads of small businesses, but might have one or two marquee brands as clients as well. Is it worth them going after those huge household name brands as a sort of aspirational case study, or is it better for them to focus on more case studies that are more representative of their clients?
I think the natural instinct is to think we want to go with the big names, we want to go with the big brands, people, household names that people will recognise and instantly spot the logo of or be able to picture the products. And if you can get those, then yeah, sure, great. You know, they're kind of like a nice little badge to have on your website and they're great to have there. I think the reality, though, is that often those organisations are actually, some of those organisations, I should say, are a bit reticent about being included. So I know with one of my clients I was writing case studies for, I won't mention the name, but there was a big household name who they've, you know, done a fantastic work for, and their client was really happy, but they just simply weren't happy about taking part in a case study, or just like a company policy. We don't publicise who we work with. So there's that issue. The other issue with the larger organisations is they often have multiple levels of approval. So you've often got to go through the marketing team, the PR team, the legal team, compliance team. And actually, it's not that they won't do it. It's just the time it takes, the effort. You may sort of question, you know, was it worthwhile? So those are a number of sort of obstacles to overcome. Whereas on the flip side, as you mentioned, if you work with smaller businesses or medium-sized businesses, that often they may be easier to agree to take part. You maybe have less approval steps to go through. And often they'll value them more. You know, they're looking to grow their presence. They're looking to invest in their marketing. So if you're offering them the opportunity to feature in your marketing and all they've got to do is take part in an interview, then actually it's relatively easy for them. So I often think that they're the low-hanging fruit when it comes to case studies. And as you say, that if that's where a lot of your market is, if that's where a lot of your customer base is, then you can really play into that as well in terms of helping people to relate to the case studies you publish, help to relate to the scenarios, the challenges, and the types of businesses that you work with. So yeah, I think if you can get a big brand aspirationally, then do it. But be aware it's probably going to be a lot more work than what you might imagine. And don't write off the smaller end, the small businesses, the medium-sized businesses, who perhaps people haven't heard of, but their stories could be, you know, perhaps even more compelling than a large brand and more helpful to you in terms of showing how you can work with similar businesses.
And particularly if you're industry focused as well. So I've had experiences in the past where we were targeting the legal sector. And to a layperson like me, I think of the legal sector as one homogenous entity. But actually within that, they really care about the types of law firms that they operate in. So firms of solicitors don't really have anything to do with barristers, and they don't have anything to do with patent attorneys, for example. I even had one example of we were pitching for business for a particular prospect, and we were able to trot out some names that they were familiar with. And this particular firm of solicitors, I don't know where they were in the legal 500, but let's say they were number 47 in the legal 500. We gave them actually a sizable law firm name that we were really quite proud of working with, and we'd been able to achieve really great things for them. And they looked down their nose and were a bit sniffy at it, and they're like, oh, but that one's only number 60 in the list. Have you got anyone that's higher than number 47? And we were sort of, okay, well, that's really strange, but obviously it really mattered to them. I suppose just another question on that particular point about who it is that you should be trying to gain case studies from. When we think about the people that you'd want to involve in the case studies as well, would you be trying to hear from, say, the user of the product, or would you be more interested in getting people's feedback or opinions that are maybe involved in the buying decision? So that might be, say, director level, CXO level, but really they're not day-to-day users of the product.
Partly depends on what your objective is. for the case study. If you're focused very much on the sales side of things and closing sales and being able to convince and convert people to go, actually, you know, we're the right organization for you, this is how we're better than the competitors, etc. If that's your aim and why you're producing the case studies, then you may want to focus in more on those decision makers. However, if you're wanting to focus more on the awareness side and the benefits of using the product and the service and what that looks like, then that may lean itself more towards the user end and what the user experience is, how that changes. And ultimately, you know, some of the best case studies come about from when I'm talking to a customer and talking to a user of that organization, and they get into lots of detail about how their day-to-day job has changed as a result of using this product. And that's often some of the most fascinating for me to learn about and to write about. But also that level of detail makes it more memorable, makes it more specific, but above all, it makes it more believable. That if you can really describe how using this product or using this service has made such a difference to that person's day-to-day role. The third thing just to say about it is obviously it depends on people's availability. So you may struggle either, you know, at both ends, either to get hold of decision makers or to get hold of the right kind of users. And so you're a little bit beholden to the customer in terms of, you know, who's available or who's got the right sort of insights into it. The ideal situation, obviously, is to talk to a number of people, but that's I find that's kind of quite rare to get a number of voices in there. If you can do that, then you can really expand on the whole story, the whole journey. But otherwise, try and optimize what you can do from speaking to decision makers or users, perhaps people that have just been involved in the relationship and have seen it through from the point of view of how things used to be to how things are today.
Yeah, and I think as well, businesses can help themselves out to some extent by building a process around that. If they know that they're going to be seeking case studies from clients, often I've found that you might get a client who's perfectly happy to take part. And if they then try and cast their mind back to 2 years ago before they started using your service, often they can't actually remember the detail of it. They'll have a feeling, and by the way, it's perfectly valid, I think, to have those feelings involved. So the impact it's made to your life and how it's helped you in your role, and you know, maybe it's saved loads of admin time and you're actually able to get home in time to put the kids to bed and all of those lovely feelings, it's wonderful to have. But unless you've recorded it from the outset, you don't necessarily remember what the pains business-wise were, or what the return on investment is for before you started using that product to what it is now. If you're trying to quantify it with cold hard metrics, unless they're recorded from the outset and that process is built in, often they just get forgotten about.
Yeah, I think that's the challenge. It's being able to have both, be able to have the quantifiable metrics alongside the qualitative experience and personal impact of it. And I think that's the gauging the right time to ask for case studies and to actually talk to individuals as well. I think you hit on a really good point there, that if you're going to build up a bank or a suite of case studies, it's going to pay to actually think about whereabouts in your customer journey through, you know, onboarding them and servicing them and providing them with support. Does it actually make sense to listen to them and to get their input? And obviously, if you're providing a service that's the customer's using over a period of time, then, you know, the ideal position perhaps to be to do that at a number of points, that they're a long-term customer, that, you know, you have a conversation with them early on, you know, after they're onboarded, but then, you know, you come back again in 6 months' time or 12 months' time. And so the case study process isn't something that's completely separate over here in marketing versus customer support, but actually becomes, as you say, becomes embedded in terms of how the business operates, and then has an opportunity for being able to get some accurate metrics and be able to show the full journey that the customer's been on, or perhaps he's still on if they're still working with you at that point.
Yeah, I think it's absolutely key to try and bake it into a process, actually, rather than just relying on people's goodwill and remembering to do it. And I've certainly had it before where every single monthly meeting with the account management team at a business, you'd say, oh, have we got any customers who want to do a case study? And everyone was kind of reluctant to offer anything up because it kind of felt like everybody was avoiding using up their social capital and goodwill with a particular client who they might need to rely on that sort of goodwill and a bit of a favour later down the line or when it comes to contract negotiations. An approach we took that some account managers were better at than others was inevitably when a client comes to the end of their contract and they're looking at renewing for another year or 3 years or whatever it might have been for this particular software product, invariably there'd be some kind of negotiation where we as the supplier would provide a service and say, right, for extending your contract for another 3 years, the price is going to be X. And the customer would respond and say, well, actually, how's about we negotiate that price down a little bit? And having the ability and giving your account managers the ability to use that as a negotiating device of saying, well, okay, fine, well, maybe we can meet halfway, but in return for that, would you be happy to provide a case study within the next 6 months? Most of the time, people took them up on that. But was that if that wasn't baked into the process, it would never have happened.
I think that's the key, that if you make something part of the process, then it's something else that people are expecting to do, which you say, rather than memory or goodwill or things like that.
Yeah, absolutely. We spoke before this call about a structure and a flow of case studies that you found works especially well for you. Do you want to talk about that for a bit?
Yeah, sure. So I talked a bit about with case studies about the idea of stories. And often, you know, a lot of companies, they don't talk about case studies. They talk about customer stories. And that's really what I'm referring to in terms of talking to the customers, understanding their experience. And so in terms of creating and writing a case study from that, I always think about the story structure to use. And one of the things we've talked about is the sort of standard three-part approach that is often used, the sort of challenges or problems, the solution or the action that took place, and then the results customer saw from it. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, it's the that sort of three-part story extends beyond marketing. It's just a basic approach to stories. But in terms of making a really compelling case study or customer story, I think that there's other elements that you can include in that. So I talked earlier on about the pain point that a customer has that you can actually expand on it. Rather than just describing, you know, what is the pain point, what pain did you face, it's about understanding more about the impacts that had on the business and learning what that pain looked like if they were able to describe it, and knowing what actually led them to take action, what actually led them to look for other solutions or ways of actually getting rid of that pain and solving it. So in terms of structuring the case study, you could always look at one and sort of pick out elements and say, well, you know, that was the challenge, that was what they'd done, and that was what the results were. But what I try and do is actually break that down a little bit more and expand on what some of those elements are. So the impact is one, thinking about the results. One of the things that's often useful to include in a case study is to ask the customers about their plans for the future and to understand how the work that's taken place has informed their strategy or has informed their thinking about what they're going to be doing in the future. And the great advantage, I think, of touching on that is it gives people who are reading the case study the idea that, you know, this is it's not just a single point solution, but it's something that's actually going to be a bit of a launch pad to the future as well, and a bit of an enabler, a catalyst for what they can do in the future. And so the structure, as it were, it really needs to depend on what the story is and being able to describe that. And ultimately, because I base the case studies on the conversation with the customer, it's using their words to actually guide it and using quotes from the customer throughout the case study to illustrate and to guide that story along those lines from ultimately, at the most simplistic level, where they used to be, where they are today, and where they want to be in the future. And as with any story, with any film or book or any work of fiction around a story, there's different paths through that journey. But the idea is to actually bring it to life, to make it engaging and to make it readable, that people actually want to pick it up and think, actually, no, this is really interesting. Not only can I see that this company has achieved X, Y, and Z, but I've actually been able to relate to the journey they've been on all the way through that.
Yeah, it's a lovely little story arc, isn't it? Looking into the future as well. The other thing I love about it is it alludes to some kind of expansion opportunity in the future. So the bulk of the case study might be about a particular pain and how that was resolved, which might not relate to, I don't know, a suite of other products that you as the vendor have available. But the fact that the client might mention, oh, in the future, we're looking forward to using your Blue Widget solution as well, because that's going to help us do X, Y, and Z. Well, even if an existing client or a future client wasn't in the market for that, at least they then know that that's a possibility, and they might then be a bit more receptive to talking about that when they do speak to the sales or account management team. So let's imagine we've baked in a brilliant process for getting case studies created. We've got some beautiful case studies written. There's lovely story arcs in there. They're really compelling, really useful content. How would you go about distributing them? And would you recommend they're gated or ungated?
Okay, so in terms of distributing, we talked about different ways of being able to use case studies earlier on. So to me, the sort of case studies 101 is having it on your website, having a section on your website for your case studies, but also using them not just on a case study page, but on your homepage, on other elements, and being able to use them on blog posts, etc. So you've got different elements on your website that are actually benefiting from the case study content that you've created. Again, the other types of digital marketing to use the case studies on would be on your social media. So LinkedIn posts, using whether it be like a carousel or a sort of text and image post. There's so many different formats to be able to create now that, you know, you can take that base material that you've got and turn it into many different forms that you can use online. You know, and if you're creating a white paper, you know, you can again use these elements from the case study within the white paper as a way of illustrating the solution that you're describing within the white paper. On your question about gating, I'm quite passionate about around gating, that I'm very anti-gating. I kind of think, well, you know, you've put all this work into creating a fantastic case study or a customer story. You want as many of your audience and potential customers as possible to read it. So why would you restrict access? Why would you lock it up? And these days, with everything that's online, people prefer to do the research themselves. They'll go out, they'll look around for, you know, solutions, ways to fix problems that they've got. And case studies are essentially part of that research. So if you lock up your case studies and make it harder for people to read them, even if that is just handing over an email address, well, free access. And there was actually some research I did recently looking at the top software companies in the UK in terms of how many of them gated case studies and how many of them didn't. And I think it's about 95% didn't gate their case studies. And even the 5%, I was kind of being a bit generous in terms of saying they gated them, they didn't really provide anything extra as part of the gate. It was more, well, you can download a file with all the case studies in, but you can still read them online if you want to. So certainly in the world of B2B software, I think people are realizing that actually the benefit of gating case studies is much less. You know, people are much less willing to hand over an email address in return for a case study. Obviously, if you're using case studies as a way of generating leads, you know, they'll still be effective, and you can still include calls to action. You can still include, you know, links in your case studies through to other parts of your content or through to your contact pages. But people want to be in control of stuff themselves in terms of when they're doing research. And my view is that actually gating stuff is actually going to be detrimental to your marketing and to the effectiveness of your case studies.
Yeah, totally agree. I think most people now make the majority of their buying decision, or at least whittle it down to a short list, before they've ever spoken to a salesperson. So the more information you can make available to them to help them pick you, I think the better.
Absolutely, yeah.
Look, Rob, that's been brilliant. I've really enjoyed how focused we've been on this episode. Before I let you go, I'm asking everybody for one marketing book recommendation. Would love to hear yours.
So it's a little bit of an oldie, but it's one of the ones that I quite enjoyed reading, and I found, you know, immensely helpful. It's the Adweek Copywriting Handbook by Josie Sugarman. Now, it's
if you've got it on your bookshelf down there, yeah.
that wasn't arranged, but it's about print ads, which sounds, you know, a bit old hat when we're talking about case studies and websites and the rest of it. But the reason I'd say it's my favourite is it's incredibly easy to read, but the fundamental reason are the stories that are within there that Joseph Sugarman uses to actually illustrate his points. Throughout the book, he uses a number of different stories, predominantly involving himself and either the seminars that he's run or the work that he's done in terms of creating print ads and doing the research for headlines. And it, to me, it brings across the value of stories that we've been talking about in terms of customer stories. But in his case, using it to get across lessons about how to use copywriting, how to create great copy. There's one particular story that sticks in my mind, and this just shows, I'm going to say this now, it shows how old this dates back to, in that he was doing some research around a digital watch that he was creating a print ad for and was going to be selling through his magazine. So this was in the late 70s. And he was talking to the lead engineer, been making this, you know, cutting edge digital watch. And the cutting edge feature of this digital watch was that you could see the time at night. All the other digital watches had an LCD display, and you had to press a button for it to light up and see the time. Whereas this one had some radioactive material in it that enabled it to actually be visible, you know, even in pitch dark. And the key thing that he found from talking to the engineer was that this particular company had used a laser to actually seal the radioactive material inside the watch. And being in the late 70s, this was, you know, a really big thing, the laser. And so that was the hook that he used for the article. But it, you know, illustrated the, you know, the value of doing the research and talking to SMEs. But ultimately for me as a book, you know, stories like that, you know, that really sell the messages you're trying to get across are the ones that I enjoy reading, I find most useful. So that gets my vote as my favourite marketing book.
Yeah, it's a great story. Thank you. And after listening to the podcast, how can people connect with you, Rob?
Sure. So I'm on LinkedIn. Rob Beadle UK is my handle on that. My website is robbeadle.co.uk. And we mentioned about the case study Kickstarter as well. I'll share the link for that with you, David, and you can share it with the listeners. And, you know, feel free to download that as well.
Will do. No, that's great. Thanks a lot, Rob. Thanks, everyone. Thanks for listening to Marketing Freed. If you've got value from this episode, please subscribe on your podcast app of choice and join me next time, where we'll be bringing you more insights and strategies from yet another freelance marketing expert. Until then, happy marketing.